Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. This is Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, a part of Mental Health News Radio Network. And I want to give a big shout out to Kristen Sananta Walker and the Mental Health News Radio Network for providing a platform for us to have our voices heard. And also want to give a shout out to Maggie Judge and to Emily Parker and say thank you for all that you do for the Morph team. Today we have Joanne Brennan, author of How to Thaw Your Frozen Feet, and we're going to talk about her book, and how using her process can help you find your voice, which is the theme for the month on Morph Into a New You, and how finding your voice can help you escape whatever abusive or troubling situation you're in, how you can find your power by using your voice and getting away. Hello, Joanne.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's an honor. Are you getting settled into the new year?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. We had a lovely Christmas and it's cold here in Canada, but we're making it work anyways.
Yeah. You can have Canada. Thank you. I saw the picture you put on Facebook earlier. I'm good. So, Joanne, tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about how to thaw your frozen feet and how someone might be able to use that to find your voice. That's a lot.
Absolutely, Johnny. Yes, absolutely. I would love to. So a little bit about my personal self. I'm a mother of two absolutely beautiful children. I love being a mother to them. And, you know, I have various background skills in real estate, financial management, accounting, executive administration, especially, and running some small businesses and setting them up. However, based on my past, I decided that it was time to share my voice. I was brutally abused at a young age, and I don't say that to impress upon anybody, but to impress upon people that, you know, when you're going through struggles in life and crisis and trauma, there is hope and there is a way out. And I decided that there are so few women that overcome the struggles that they go through being abused, that it was time to become my own voice and be a voice of hope and for the world out there, because my story is exceptional to me. It may not be exceptional to many people, but you know the depths of my story, and I won't go into too much grave detail about it, but it is a very unique situation. And to be able to be where I am today and share that with others, I feel I would be doing a disservice to people out there who may potentially be struggling. So that's a little bit about myself. About my book, How to Thaw Your Frozen Feet, is a 10-step guide. Initially was geared towards, being marketed towards women. However, there are so many men out there also that are being abused behind closed doors. And so it is available for men as well. And in this guide, what we discuss is many people don't actually realize when they are being abused, because when we're in a situation, especially a fearful one, we tend to normalize that atmosphere. So one of the first things we talk about is pinpointing the types of abuse, whether it's one or several, you know, a combination of different types of abuses, whether it be emotional, physical, spiritual, financial, sexual. So that's the first thing that we discuss. And then overcoming love that may still linger, because, you know, when you share your hopes and dreams with somebody, even if, again, going back to normalizing your situation, thinking that it is okay, that's a big denial factor. And what we share in that chapter of the guide is overcoming love that still may linger, which is very, very normal for many people, and how not to dwell on it. And that being in an abusive relationship, once it's pinpointed as being abusive, that moving on is the best possible thing that you can do for yourself and your loved ones. Mainly in my case, which was I had two beautiful children. Then, Johnny, we talk about pulling through grief and intense sadness as well as depression, because there is a difference between grief, sadness, and depression, to which I've all been through several times. And it's something that some people may experience and some people may not. Majority will, though. And how to let go of someone that you had shared your hopes and dreams with, and working through those stages and tapping into community resources that would be beneficial to you, whether it be a family doctor, psychiatrist, interpersonal therapist, a support group of some sort. Additionally, we talk about emotional reactions, because we all have emotions. And, you know, we may go through rages, we may go through anger, we may go through guilt as well. And one of the biggest traits that I have found that I was not aware of was hypervigilance is a trait that develops in an abusive relationship, as well as substance relationships as well that you may have. And dealing with hypervigilance and other emotions and wounds, scars that need to be addressed, as well as other individuals in your life. As we all know, we have significant others, and not everybody is going to be supportive of you leaving. Many times in an abusive relationship, what happens is we keep it secret because we feel guilty. We may feel embarrassed. We may feel shame, scorned. And once it's come to realization and you have the voice within yourself to share with loved ones that you are actually being abused, for them, because it's been kept secret for so long, what happens is they have a reaction, they have an opinion, they have a retaliation, and may encourage you to actually continue staying in that relationship. And so we discuss how to deal with, in my guide, how to deal with the other significant individuals in your life. Also, there are practical considerations. I mean, realistically, we have children, many of us, finances, divorce, legal matters. So we discuss that as well in my guide, and different resources on how to tap into that as well as deal with those things. Majority of the time, professionals are the best choice, and there are many, many, many resources. As for Canada, I know that you're in the States, Johnny, but in Canada, there are so many resources for abused women or victims, for that matter, I'll say. And we discuss on how to tap into that. And then a very important subject is rebuilding your potential and finding your voice, your sense of self again, through reconnecting with your talents, strengths, and abilities, as well as your skills. Because when we put ourselves at the bottom of the list, we tend to neglect everything else. We try in this abusive relationship to please, to go through the minefield or the battlefield of putting out fires in an effort to protect ourselves. And so many of our talents and strengths, abilities, and skills, they are just completely, completely neglected and completely out the door. So what we do with that is, in this chapter, is we discuss on, you know, whether you used to be athletic, whether you used to be a painter or a knitter or traveled, you know, whatever it may be, there are different things that you can tap into to start loving yourself again and rebuilding that potential. Because when you rebuild that potential, what happens is what is also lost is your self-concept, your self-confidence, your worth when you're in an abusive relationship. So when you tap into those talents, strengths, and abilities, you start to build yourself up once again. And then I also talk about resisting returning to the relationship, even if you wish to return to that abuser. On an average, unfortunately, an abused woman returns to the relationship 7 times before she finally makes that final decision, unless she's handicapped by the relationship, or murdered for that matter. And so we discuss about how to not return to the relationship, honing in on the emotions that you may have that make you feel crippled and want to return. And for me, I returned 3 times. And after the 3rd time, it was the last call for me, you know, being discerning and callousing my mind and coming to the realization that it was not beneficial to myself or the children. So that's a really important subject as well, as they all are. It's a very sad statistic where women return to the relationship, you know, up to 7 times before something either tragically happens or they make a decision. And then maintaining communications is vital, especially when you have children. Now, there are many, many different scenarios, and all, you know, there's a domino effect once you start to leave the relationship. Do you maintain communications with the abuser? Is there a third party? There's legal ramifications, the children involved. So we discussed this in that chapter as well. And usually when having been in an abusive relationship, a third person or third party, and again, in Canada, which I'm sure in the States as well, there are resources to be able to tap into, whether it has to do with you discussing between that particular individual that abused you, or protective services for the children, or services where there's a third party monitoring the visitations, and then being open to love again. And this is not probably what anybody is thinking. I'm not talking about when you've left an abusive relationship and life has left you feeling very raw and vulnerable. I'm not talking about going out and finding somebody else. What I discuss is how to love yourself first, how to wholly love yourself and become a wholesome individual. This is a massive chapter, because what I have learned through all of this, through all of my therapy and schooling, whether it be formal or informal, is nobody actually teaches us how to love ourselves through the mainstream education. Society tells us to, okay, go out, get a job, you know, get an education, get a job, get married and have kids. Well, it's not that simple. So realistically, professionals can help you move forward in understanding that not everybody is hurtful. You can move on and live a happy and fulfilling life. And until you face and build the foundation of loving yourself, then you will never, ever, ever be wholesome for anyone else in your life. Not your children, not your significant others, your family members. So that is the last chapter that we talk about, which is self-love.
Wow, that's all big. The last time we spoke, I touched on a lot of things that are here for me, because I can relate to so much of this, even as a man, so much. And the types of abuse, I mean, some of them are obvious. So if you got a black eye, you can bust a nose, whatever, we, you know. But some of the things that I was queuing in on as you were going through that is like overcoming the lingering love. Well, you know, for me, I don't know that I ever really in those relationships knew what love was. What I knew was I was getting some kind of need met, whether it was being, you know, okay, I'm with the really pretty girl, so my ego is being fed, even though she's treating me like crap.
Yeah.
She's doing whatever. I feel like there's always, for me, there's something that I think I'm getting from it. That need is being met. And then with that, the lingering love, I think is, for me, was more about the idea of love. It's like,
yes,
someone is there, even though they're like, it's not fun, it's hurtful, it's someone. And I have the illusion of being loved. And I think that was big for me, was like, okay, this is not love. And for me, I had to identify and define and investigate what my own ideas of love were. And what I discovered for myself is like, oh, wow, that doesn't even sound like love when I really think about it. So,
yeah.
And man, that thing about the family not being supportive, well, they have their own thing, you know, and especially if the abuse that you're enduring is one of the, I'll say, the invisible one, you know, it's like everything seems fine because the abuser, for lack of a better way of putting it right now, is very clever about how they abuse you financially or how they abuse you emotionally. And when everybody else is around, you don't see it. So, yeah, I can see where your friends would be in denial about the abuse you're going through.
Absolutely, yes. And just to make a point on that is what I have found in the past when you're callousing your mind or peeling those layers away, Johnny, is people speak from the situation that they are actually in and what they feel is best for you, right? And so people's opinion is never what your individual reality is, because they don't know everything that's happened. So I just wanted to make that point out. That is what I've learned through being discerning and being very much a realist. So yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from.
You know, our thing here at Morph is if you change a thought, you change a life. And one of the things that I work with people with, my process, is that if you don't change the thought and you just change the behavior, like, and I'm going to use it for like what we're talking about here with you with the abusive relationships. If you just change the behavior, say, let's say you just leave the guy or the gal, and then, but you don't change how you feel about you, then what my experience was is I ended up finding another one of the same people, just in a different set of clothes and a different face. And the same abuse started going on again because I healed nothing on the inside of me.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And that is where I talk about learning to love yourself first, because you cannot be wholesome for anybody. Anybody. You may think you are, but until you deal with your demons inside, you are not wholesome for anybody properly in an authentic way.
On one of my greeting cards that I wrote, it says on the outside of the card, it says, you must face the dragon to become the butterfly.
Yes.
So if we don't face those fears that you're talking about, those inner demons, the dragon, then we don't get to become the beauty that attracts beauty. Because as long as I'm living with my demons and my secrets within me, then I'm going to attract that.
Yes.
And that is just, to me, that is what we call a spiritual law. I'm going to attract likeness. Now, granted, I may not do some of the behavior that the people we're talking about would do, but that I feel like I deserve that. And if I don't heal that part of me that thinks that is my life, my normality, as you were to normalize, I love that word. If I don't heal that part, then I'm just going to get another jerk with a different face. Does that make sense?
You're on point, Johnny. Very, very, very on point. Being in an abusive relationship, yes, absolutely. You are so on point where you will just continue that cycle into another individual over and over and over and over again. It will not enhance and transform until you callous your mind, until you peel away those layers and face who your authentic self is supposed to be.
So I just recently did a podcast with Dr. Eric Gentry about post-traumatic stress disorder. And I know that the people that we're talking about, the people that your book is directed to, have suffered trauma and are dealing with PTSD. So,
yes.
But he quoted something from the Bible, and I'm not a student of the Bible. I believe in it, but I've never even read it. But there are things in it that I just love. And what he quoted was, he said, was from the book of Thomas. And I think I know you well enough already to know that you're going to love this once I say it. And it says, bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will save you.
Mm-hmm.
Fail to bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a very poetic way of saying we're as sick as our secrets. But, you know, so many of the demons that I've had to face in my life, once I brought them to the light, they weren't near as scary as they were when I was trying to hold them to myself and keep them within. And they just didn't have the power. Once I said to somebody out loud, you know, man, I'm afraid this is going to happen. And then I said it. A lot of times, once I say some of the insanity that's running around inside of me, as soon as I say it, I'm like, really? You really thought that? So now I want to take a few minutes to touch on your particular case and how vital you finding and using your voice has been for your personal recovery and getting out of your situation.
Absolutely.
So let it rip. Let me hear how using your voice has helped you.
Well, let's start with going from being brutally abused. I was in a foreign country and I was very young at the time. I thought I knew everything. I fell prey into a very wealthy, wealthy family that was a crime family. And over a period of time, once I became more involved with the family, I was included in more things. And it wasn't until about a year after I realized that I was in a massive amount of entrapment. And so there were massive political ties and corruption within the police and the defense force. And I was involved with one of the most notorious families where I was living. And when you are involved in something so drastic and you come to that realization, it's a scary thing. And violence started to happen. Abuse started to happen. Unimaginable things started to happen. And I won't go into too grave detail, but when I discuss violence, I'm talking about police raids, shootouts, robberies, and the list goes on. And then there was a day when I sat back and I said, how much more longer does somebody have to go through this? Because this is not love. This is absolutely not love at all. So that's when, at a young age, I started to tell myself, remember who you are. I didn't have help from anybody. I was the minority living in the country where I was. I had nobody there except the family that I was involved with. And you cannot turn to any authorities because they paid them all off. Again, whether it was the defense force, the police force, or the government, they had such strong ties everywhere because of their wealth that I couldn't turn anywhere except to myself and my inner voice. And so I started to remind myself, what foundation was I given as an adopted child? So my life started out fighting. I was given up by my birth mother, and a beautiful family adopted me. They gave me the foundation of remember who you are and the upbringing that I had. And I kept reminding myself of that. I kept reminding myself of my good childhood, of the fact that I could have been somewhere else. I could have still been in an orphanage. I could have been, you know, who I wasn't already. And the fact of what I was going through did not determine my outcome. I determined my outcome. So I decided to eventually take a stand. And that's why my book is called How to Thaw Your Frozen Feet. Because when we are in an abusive relationship, or what, again, abusive, you know, my book could be for people that are on substance abuse, drugs, alcohol, whatever. But when you come to that realization and you pull yourself out of the denial and the normalization that you've created and saying, hey, and you draw the line in the sand, finally, then you can only move up. And so I remember very distinctively the day that I was able to escape. I had several broken ribs. I was beaten from top to bottom, and I had my passport in my hand, and my parents wired me a ticket back to Canada. And I remember being in the Washington airport. I called my mom, collect, because I had no money. And I said, Mom, I can't do this. And she reminded me of the foundation that they had instilled in me. And I made it to Canada. I got treated. The first place I went to was the hospital. And then I started my therapy. And once you envelope yourself with the proper surroundings, they can guide you. But you still have to find that voice within yourself. And once you find that voice, because nobody can do the work for you but you. So if you want to enhance, you want to transform, you want to make a difference, you want to make a change, whatever word you want to call it, if you want to make a better life for yourself, you have to do it, but use the resources that are at hand available to you. So I went through, I actually self-represented in court against this family. And in the end, I don't like to say, well, you know, there's a winner and a loser, but the children were protected in the end. Obviously, there's a lot of intricacies to which I won't go through right now, but I found my voice. I got my help, did the work, and now I am sharing with other women, men, people that aren't even abused. Again, this has gone so much width ways more than I could have fathomed, people coming up to me and saying, well, you know, this type of abuse is happening to me, or I'm doing this, or, you know, I'm an alcoholic, or I've been on drugs, and my book can still apply to them. And so when you realize that you are the only one that determines your worth, then you can skyrocket. Your confidence builds. You do the work internally. And I mentioned earlier in the beginning that for me to have gone through what I have gone through, it is not to impress people at all. My book isn't my story. My story is in me. My book is a guide on how to tap into the pain points. How did I get out of what I was going through? That's what's important. A story isn't really important, but it's how to help others get through what they're going through, because everybody has a story. And everybody's story matters, but it's how do you get out of that? That is what is vital. That is what is important. And that is how healing begins, is how to get out. And so today I am working on my coaching programs. My book is in the edit stage with my publisher, and we're working on a 2018 tour in the United States, as well as a number of other joint ventures through Canada. And it is to bring hope to something that is very dismal in this world today. And what goes on behind closed doors needs to open up.
Ah, so there's two things that came to mind while I was listening to you, both from the 12-step rooms. And one is, sounds to me like you were talking about what we call in the 12-step rooms, finding a bottom, where you just finally say enough, enough. And the other is that moment of clarity, when it's like you just all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, this is not working. This is not working. It's funny, you know, you and I do a lot of the same stuff in different ways. And
yes.
My book is my story, and it's an identifier. And one of the things that I believe that is important about the story part of it is, and true identification inspires hope. And when somebody that hears your story can say, oh my God, me too. I didn't do this alone. She has been there, and look at her now. And yeah, it inspires hope. And I love when I can do that. I just yesterday taught my first class at the Salvation Army drug rehab about how to cope with a mental health issue, bipolar, PTSD. Mm. We have all, I think all of us have been traumatized on some level.
Absolutely.
I don't think I can ever say, you know, that somebody else's trauma wasn't as bad as mine, or that mine was worse than somebody's, or any of that, because we don't know what somebody's ability to bear a cross is, how much of a cross they can bear. We can't determine that for another person. But I'd want to say, oh my God, our time is almost up. And so we need to start wrapping this up. So, Joanne, I want you to tell people how they can reach you. And then I'm going to tell people, give them a little outline as to what you and I are going to be doing in the future.
Absolutely, Johnny. Thank you for that. So you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/ Thaw Your Frozen Feet, THAWYOUR, Frozen Feet, as well as I'm on LinkedIn under Joanne Brennan. My website is being worked on right now by my team. It is, it's under construction. So if you go there right now, it's thawyourfrozenfeetbook.com. And, my number is 613-572-2033.
Great. Thank you.
And
go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to thank everybody. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that I'm also working on some coaching programs, as well as accepting speaking engagements. So would love, love, love to be able to bring the word out.
Okay.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. And I just want to thank the audience for listening. I want to invite you to come back to Morph Into a New You as we speak further this month about finding your voice and the importance of that, and the different ways you can do it, and what not doing it, how it keeps us locked up. And again, I want to thank all of those that help us. And I'm sending a big shout out. We're trying to build a team here at Morph to help us with the technical end of everything that we're doing. So Team Morph is looking to build the team. So connect with us at johnnycalloway.com. And thank you for being here, and tune in again next week. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real, and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.